The urban-rural divide has grown in politics over the past couple decades, and rural America has become increasingly and reliably Republican. But Jane Klebb, chair of the Nebraska Democratic Party, says there are a lot of opportunities for Democrats to win back rural voters in local, state, and national politics. She writes about how in her book, Harvest the Vote, How Democrats Can Win Again in Rural America, which is just out. Jane, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you.
So let's get to what your book is all about, which is that, as you say, Democrats have been ignoring rural voters in America. Tell us more. Why do you say that?
You know, it's really been since the 1980s when you had Jesse Jackson and Senator Tom Harkin really going to rural voters and standing with them when they were hurting. So that was the height of the farm crisis when suicide rates were high, folks didn't have access to health care, and big banks were closing in on family farms and ranches. And the Democratic Party really stood with rural communities and passed a comprehensive farm bill with their voices included. And then we forgot about them. You know, there's lots of lessons for us to be learned on how we can win back those rural voters by standing with them when they're being threatened by big pipelines or with the flooding and other impacts of climate change. But the National Democratic Party has been slow to respond.
Why do you think that is?
You know, I often hear a lot of stereotypes from urban voters saying that, you know, rural people are voting against their best interests. I understand on the one hand how you can think that looking into rural communities, but if you live in a small rural town, you feel forgotten, you feel isolated. And, you know, President Trump made it a point to really reach out to rural voters and use language that they thought that he was going to stand up for them. Obviously, the Republican Party has used a lot of cultural wedge issues like guns, abortion, and immigration to keep us all divided as a country. But Democrats can actually go into rural communities and show that we are the party that stands up for the little guy.
Well, when Republicans and when President Trump does, as you say, use these hot button wedge issues to attract rural voters, whether it be abortion or gay rights or guns, what are Democrats supposed to do?
You know, we have to be honest with voters that we are going to have different perspectives on gun reform and abortion and immigration. And that is okay. And that we have common ground when it comes to keeping our rural hospitals and schools open. And that we have common ground on protecting folks' property rights from eminent domain. When rural voters think you're not being honest with them on the cultural issues, then they will turn away from us on even economic interest issues. And that may, you know, pull your hair out because you may be saying, well, they're voting against their best interests, but they will think that they can't trust you. They need to know that we're fighting for them. And right now, they don't believe that. If we're not investing real money into helping candidates in rural communities and helping red and rural state parties rebuild, we're going to keep on facing this cycle of mutual neglect.
Well, let me just push you on that for a minute, because if you look at economic issues, one of the things that obviously has been very important to rural communities in this country over the last couple of years has been the trade war with China and the tariffs that have gone into effect against China, which has been very difficult for farmers. And President Trump launched that government bailout to help the farmers deal with that. But we do hear many farmers who say that despite being hurt themselves by the trade war by President Trump, they still support him and they think he's doing the right thing. What case would you make to those voters?
There's no question that some rural farmers continue to stand with Donald Trump, even though they are economically hurt by President Trump's trade wars. But if there's no alternative, if we're not giving them an alternative, if we're not talking to them on a regular basis and showing them that we're different, then they're going to continue to vote with Republicans.
Are you hearing an alternative right now on the trade issue from any of the Democratic candidates for president?
You know, the good thing is, and that's one of the bonuses of Iowa going first, is that all of our Democratic candidates really do have strong rural proposals. You know, as an advocate and as a state party chair, I'm going to be in the ears of those presidential campaigns that you can't just talk about rural issues once in Iowa and check the box and think that you can then move on. So we have to do a better job about talking about not only trade, but talking about property rights and rural hospitals and some of the other economic issues that are facing our rural communities all the time.
I'm glad you brought up rural hospitals because you do talk about that in this book. And when we think of healthcare, generally when we talk about healthcare, it's about who has access really to health insurance. But what you point out is that for rural Americans, they may have health insurance. They might even have good health insurance. But there is a crisis of access in many rural areas in this country, and not a lot of people on either side are talking about that.
That's right. So you have moms who are pregnant that are having to travel an hour to get to a hospital. Our daughter has autism, and we live in a small town of 25,000. So that's big relative to some other rural towns. But it took us 8 months to get an appointment with a mental health therapist for Maya. That is unacceptable. We don't have enough mental health therapists in our small town in order to meet the needs of our kids and adults who have mental illness. And if we had a child who had to be inpatient for an eating disorder or another mental illness, we would literally have to put our kid on a plane to Denver or another big city because there's not an inpatient treatment facility anywhere near us. So there's a real crisis happening, and there's real common ground that Democrats can stand on to show that we're standing up for our families. But we got to start talking about it on a regular basis.
You bring up your experience fighting against the Keystone XL pipeline as an example of effective grassroots organizing in rural Nebraska. That project was rejected by the Obama administration, but it has been resurrected by President Trump. What did you learn from that experience of getting rural voters together to oppose something that the National Democratic Party did end up opposing, basically?
You know, this was a real unlikely alliance that took us, 3 years to develop trust among farmers, ranchers, tribal nations, as well as kind of progressive climate advocates. We showed rural communities in Montana, in South Dakota, and in Nebraska that Democrats were standing with them. And that was a real shift. And I know personally, hundreds of farmers and ranchers who are no longer Republicans anymore that were involved in that fight. Some of them are actually not Democrats, but the vast majority could not. That's a bridge too far, but they're registered independents. But they have started to see Democrats in a very different light. So that's what we need to do. And that's what I'm arguing is that, there are issues when it comes to Medicaid expansion, eminent domain, climate change, protecting small family farms from corporate agriculture. These are all issues that urban Democrats agree with as well.
Let me ask you about the presidential race that's going on right now. Is there anybody in the field that you think could not win rural voters in this country?
I think every single Democratic candidate that's in the primary, including Bloomberg, including Sanders, both of them can win, and everybody in between can win. The question for me is, will they put resources on the ground? Because what often happens is that we play in this swing state map. That model is outdated. President Trump has rewired the electoral map. We have to play everywhere, including in states like Nebraska and South Dakota.
But do you think that a Democratic candidate for president is going to be doing rallies in rural areas of this country, or will they mainly, as usual, be focused on cities where they can attract more people all at once?
By 2040, 80% of the population is going to be concentrated in 15 to 17 states. That means that less than 50% of the population is going to be electing 84% of the U.S. senators. So we as a Democratic Party have to decide this election cycle if we're actually going to be taking rural states and rural voters seriously, because otherwise we are literally handing elections over to the Republican Party, even though Democrats will have the majority of votes when you look at popular vote versus electoral college. I'm definitely telling presidential candidates in their campaigns and their surrogates that they have to start showing up in rural communities if we're going to win the White House, but more importantly, if we're going to win some of the U.S. Senate seats. And I know people often only look at the shiny object of the White House, but we have to look at the structure of how we elect people, because we actually can elect Democrats in these rural states if they have the resources to run and win.
Well, you talk in this book about the importance of the Democratic Party focusing on local races in addition to Senate races and obviously the presidency.
That's right. In Nebraska, we had 850 Democrats run across our state in 2018, and 73% of them won. And that was a lot of down ballot races, mayors, city council members, school board members, state legislators. So we can start to build a very strong bench where also local control matters. You know, you can impact climate change and the issues we care about, like expanding Medicaid. That can be controlled at the state level. But what we have done for many years, I would argue for the past 20 years, we've completely ignored state parties, and they are the backbone of every single candidate on the Democratic ballot, from president all the way down. If we're going to start winning in these red states and rural states again, you have to fully invest in state parties.
Do you think that Nebraska will be in play in 2020?
Nebraska is unique, very similar to Maine, where we split our electoral votes by congressional district. And so there's no question, both our congressional district one, which has Lincoln and a lot of small towns, as well as CD2, which includes our biggest city of Omaha. Those districts are definitely in play for the electoral college map. You know, right now, unfortunately, presidential campaigns are not on the ground yet in Nebraska. But hopefully after Super Tuesday, presidential campaigns will get serious and start to play on the ground here in Nebraska.
That is Jane Klebb, who is chair of the Nebraska Democratic Party and author of the new book, Harvest the Vote, How Democrats Can Win Again in Rural America. Jane, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And you can find an excerpt at hereandnow.org.